Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Vice Admiral Conrad Lautenbacher, U.S. Navy retired, Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmospheres, and Administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Joining us in our conversation is Dion Rudnicki. Well, Admiral, can you give us a brief overview of NOAA's strategic plan and how the priorities are set in place for the 21st century?
Yes, I would love to do that. The strategic planning process, I think, is fundamental to any organization. And I look at it, let's look at it just as a work list. What is it you want to do, and why do you want to do it, and how are you going to get there? So a strategic plan is not something that sits on the administrator's desk in a glossy form that you pass to a visitor who comes in and like to see something about NOAA. It is, in fact, a working document. It needs to be updated once a year, which we are doing in NOAA at this point. It is a living document. Obviously, in the private sector, they update them even more quickly, depending on your quarterly results. But we at least do it on a yearly basis. So the object is to look at our long-range goals, to then build some programs that allow us to work on those goals, translate those to budgets, then execute them in the budget year, look at results, measure the results, metrics, and then feed that back into the process. And so you have a living process. We call it PPBES, Planning, Programming, Budgeting, and Execution System. It's a strategic management system that allows you to build a program, build a strategic plan, and take it all the way to the budget. Now, let me just, the four themes that we have come to from a rather rigorous system of taking, having constituent surveys, constituent meetings, taxpayer meetings, internal meetings, is four major themes. First of all, the ecosystem and an ecosystem approach to management of coastal and ocean resources. Extremely important for us to be able to not manage things on a one item, a one incident basis. Everything is connected in the physical and biological, chemical world. We must learn to manage that way. It's an important theme and an important set of programs. Next is understanding climate change and climate variability as to how it applies to the way we are living and the way we'll have to live and adapt and mitigate in the future. Third is weather and water. The water cycle is extremely important. It's not just weather, it's how it deals with water, which is the most significantly most important resource in the world today, and one which will become more and more scarce as we go forward with 6 billion, now 6 billion, soon to be 9 billion people. And then finally, very important for this country and the rest of the world is environmentally safe and economically efficient transportation. Transportation is the glue that holds the world, this global orb, together. Maritime transportation, air transportation, surface transportation all depend on understanding the kinds of things that NOAA does day by day. All of our programs really fit into those four categories, and we connect them so that there will be outputs that give us measurable results of whether we're making progress in each of those four areas.
The December 26 tsunami that ravaged South Asia all affected personally in the U.S. and around the globe. And now it has a lot of us in the U.S. thinking about how something could happen in the U.S. From a disaster perspective. How likely is it for a tsunami to happen here on the coast, and how is the U.S. prepared for such an occurrence?
The short answer up front, and I'll explain a little more. Obviously, the Pacific area is more dangerous to us than the Atlantic area is. The Pacific has a number of tectonic plates that have subduction zones, and basically plates are colliding. That creates more seismic activity and the potential for more ocean disturbances that could turn into tsunamis. On the East Coast, for instance, the plates that we have are pulling apart in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So there's less of a chance that you're going to have the same kind of seismic activity to generate a wave. However, there have been tsunamis in the Atlantic, and we have had tsunamis in the Pacific. Unfortunately, they don't occur all that often, so people forget about them from one event to the next, because they're, you know, the significant ones that people can see maybe occur every 30, 40, 50 years in the Atlantic, perhaps, and a little bit more frequently in the Pacific, although you read about them all the way around the rim of the Pacific, not just along our coastlines. So we're more dangerous, more vulnerable in the Pacific, less vulnerable in the Atlantic, but there are chances for significant tsunamis in the East Coast as well, and we need to protect ourselves on all coasts.
I also understand that NOAA plans for the Global Earth Observation System of Systems, GEOS, an international Earth observing system that provides end-to-end alerts and visualization. Can you give us more details on this?
Yes, I would love to. I think this is a very important initiative for the future. It is the ability to actually take the pulse of the planet. What is going on in all segments of our Earth and connecting those things together so that we can, first of all, understand what's happening, and then we can use it economically. Some simple examples are the one you just mentioned, hazard warning and mitigation. We had no system in the Indian Ocean that could warn people about tsunamis. Yet a simple system could be put into place that would not take much in terms of investment. It would take much international cooperation and goodwill to turn that into a reality. But it is doable, and we are working on it now as part of a global Earth observing system of systems. Now, this is an international effort. We have now 100 organizations, some 60-some nations that have agreed to form this coalition, along with almost 40 United Nations and intergovernmental organizations that are responsible, like the World Meteorological Organization, the Intergovernmental Ocean Commission, Oceanographic Commission, the FAO, Food and Agricultural Organization, and I can go through the long list of alphabet soup from the UN. But these organizations are responsible for either building information systems or using it. And now we have the nations together that provide the money and the support and the political will for this to happen, all in one organization. And we've gone through a series of three Earth observing summits with ministerial level participation. The United States is a leader, and this effort just set up a permanent secretariat in Geneva just last week. So we are on our way to building a global Earth observing system.
In both segments now, you've talked about the importance of international cooperation. What role is NOAA playing in sort of, you know, pulling all this together and making this international cooperation happen?
NOAA is really a unique organization in terms of its ability to do things or to have influence. If you look at the rest of the world and look at how they are segmented, or stovepipes as we call them, inside their governments for these various issues that NOAA has together, fisheries management, coastal zone management, weather forecasting, tides and currents, mapping and charting, ocean conditions. All of those things are segmented in other parts of the world, many cases. NOAA has it together in one organization, and it was really a stroke of genius that put it together, because it allows us to be a leader in the ability to bring and tie earth science fields together in a coordinated way. So I think we have a very important leadership role in the country to act as a focus for bringing things together in earth science and for the rest of the world. So I believe we have to operate on all levels, from you know, local to state, regional, United States, and international. And I've asked my people, and they've taken the challenge to be active at all levels.
So you just mentioned how NOAA has a lot of things pulled together, and with that, integration becomes a major theme within NOAA in itself. Can you tell us a little bit about the NOAA observing system architecture and how this will integrate observing systems?
Yes, I found that when I arrived at NOAA that we were stovepiped to a certain extent, and that hampered our ability to be able to support this notion I mentioned of tying things together. So we created mechanisms to build ourselves together. The strategic plan is one, and the themes I mentioned is one. But we have an Office of Program Planning and Integration that helps with strategic planning and does what I call matrix management across our lines. We also have a number of very dedicated program managers who are able to cut across the various areas and bring people together. And we build our budgets in a way that allow us to operate in an integrated fashion.
People who make decisions need useful information. Part of what would go on in a place where they do science is a lot of research. How are you transitioning the research into products and services for people to make decisions?
And that's an important area for almost any organization, and it is one. It's described in the areas we do. There's a publication that was put out by National Academy. It was called "The Valley of Death: How Do You Get from Research to Operations?" We have spent a great deal of time working on that issue. It was part of a research review team special effort that we made in the last couple of years, and we have some new policies coming into. to build from research to operations. Very important. But I think first of all is to connect with customers. We really have to connect with the customers, the users. I admit I'm using some private sector language, but the ability to be able to meet the needs of the public is extremely important. So we go out and we talk to people. We hold workshops. We hold public information sessions. We just completed yesterday a national workshop for the Global Earth Observing System of Systems, bringing in all sectors of our economy and asking them what they felt was most important and how they wanted to relate to their government in doing that. So this issue of finding out what it's marketing in term in the private sector, kind of what are the products that are needed, and then we try to work on how to build them and how to move them from one part of our organizations to another. We have two ways of doing research. We have a separate research branch in NOAA that's dedicated to research, and it's a laboratory system, a number of laboratories, but it's applied, remember, it moves directly into real products. And then we also have smaller research elements that are attached to each one of our line offices, and those are near-term opportunities that continually work on improving products and on our accuracy and our timeliness, and that's a continuous kind of a rolling process, and then you have this longer range research segment that brings in bigger issues and a little bit of the push-pull kind of thing where people in the research area are pushing items into the operations section.
That's an interesting way to get research to market. What's NOAA's corporate identity and how is it being developed? We'll ask its administrator, Admiral Conrad Lautenbacher, to take us through this when the Business of Government Hour continues.